Star Wars has returned to theaters. In fact, in a way that I never thought as a Star Wars fan for many years, even though I've done this very podcast, a new generation's getting introduced to that galaxy far, far away on the big screen, and it's an incredible, incredible time to be a Star Wars fan. This is the podcast episode that I have been meant to record. This is the podcast episode that we're meant to do when we started the show, even though we didn't even know there would be new Star Wars films at the time. And man, I am so excited for tonight's episode. You know what? A scavenger longs for something better. A stormtrooper wants to change his destiny. A pilot is on a mission. A son betrays his father. And the hero that saved the galaxy has failed. Thus begins Star Wars: The Force Awakens. And our review starts right now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 200 of the Star Wars Report podcast. I'm your host, Riley Blanton, and I am so grateful that you've tuned in to our podcast here as we give our initial reaction to Star Wars: The Force Awakens. I started this podcast 5 years ago, and the people who recorded the very first episode way back in early 2011 are with me tonight, and I could not be more excited and more happy. And I'm going to bring first in my good buddy and yours, co-host with me here at the Star Wars Report podcast. It's Mr. Mark Herleman. Mark,
hey,
thanks for joining
everybody.
Us.
It is good to be here. Holy cow. Five years and wow.
And also, my sister, co-founder with me here at the Star Wars Report, it's Bethany Blanton, everybody. How's it going, Bethany?
Oh, it's going well. I just saw The Force Awakens for the third time in theaters in as many days. And it seems to get better with each viewing.
It does. It does indeed. And that's the case for me, too. And it's going to be, this podcast is going to be an interesting one. It's going to be a spoiler podcast. I think most of you could assume that because of the title. I'm going to make sure everyone knows that. So if you're listening this far, just be aware. Spoilers abound. So we will be talking about not the film. This is not a review of The Force Awakens. This is our initial reaction because this film, without a doubt, has been the most difficult Star Wars film I've ever had to process. It's a weird thing for me to say, and I did not expect it at all, but I did not walk away from this film with the same euphoria and excitement that I have every time I've watched a Star Wars movie. And initially, I wasn't sure that I was happy about that. And it took a lot of time to really sit down and process what we've seen. And it's still a process. But I think now having the third screening that we had today, me and Bethany and my mom and the one and only Steve Glosson, we've had some time. And I think here's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about the death of Han Solo and how we felt at the end of the film. Because I really did, I mean, I'll be honest, I thought this might be the kind of thing that we would want to actually take the time and go through the film and do like a big extravaganza podcast review, which we will be doing that in the future. But the purpose of tonight's episode is kind of a sober one. I realize this is probably the most low-key, honestly, that I've ever started a Star Wars Report podcast. But I feel like it's appropriate because this is where I found myself as a Star Wars fan at the beginning of this movie. Man. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring in Bethany and Mark. I'm actually going to ask you guys because I know I have a little bit of a monologue there at the beginning, but I'll just get with your guys' initial reaction of Star Wars The Force Awakens. How did you feel, Bethany, walking out of that movie theater? Let's talk about Star Wars.
Well, I will say, sitting in the theater the very first time that I saw it, I had Steve Glosson sitting to my left and Greg, Teresa Delgado's husband, mm-hmm. sitting on my right. And at the moment when the Star Wars logo flashed on screen, mm-hmm. and the moment when we see the crawl first begin, I think Steve and I just clutched each other in this very girly display of emotion that... and just sat there for a second, just stunned as we read the crawl for the first time. And from then on out, it was an emotional ride. And I left the theater almost not being sure what to feel, just because I was so emotionally overwhelmed.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely. It was tough to process. Mark, where were you when you first saw it at the end, when you walked out of that movie theater? Where were you as a Star Wars fan?
Man, I was just completely blown away. I immediately put it up there as my favorite film. Those of you guys that are listening to me on the show, you guys all know I'm a huge Legends fan. And I've said before that Luke Skywalker in Legends is my favorite character, but when it came to canon, Han Solo was the character that I most associated and identified myself with. So when I read, Legacy and Chewie died, it was me and my best friend. It was my best friend dying. And so when this movie came and it did what it did, I managed to be spoiler-free enough that I did not know it was coming.
Yeah.
So when Han starts walking out and he yells out, "Ben,"
yeah.
I had my very first, I think, expanded universe reaction. My heart broke for Han, not for me, but for Han. And I did. I hand in my palm, face palm, but it was in sorrow. Like, oh no, it's Ben. Like the name made it over, because my kids are all named after characters from that. I lost my son, Ben. So, I had that whole, Ben was named after Ben Skywalker. Well, now there's that whole Solo connection. But I really hurt for Han through this movie. And that was the thing that I was processing the most. Like, I came away just blown away. The whole experience was glorious for me. I loved the pacing of the film. I loved everything that was going my way. It felt very Ring Theory in the right ways for me. There were a couple parts where some CGI got a little over the top, but in the era that we live, it isn't any worse than anything else we got at some point in any one of the films. So, I've always said every Star Wars film has its ups and its downs. And so overall, I was just glowing when it was over, because my wife was really worried. You guys all knew me going into this. This was something like I was like afraid I'd go in and have just my fandom was destroyed. I was so distraught that it just ruined one of those. Oh, we threw everything for Legends to the side for this. And that wasn't the case. I really enjoyed it. In fact, it made me appreciate Han and Legends more because of the aspects that I felt like canon kind of robbed him. They didn't really say that Han and Leia were married, but they were in Legends. He lost the ship and he only had it back for a short period of time. Well, he had it in Legends. So, I have solace in that a lot of the things about my favorite character are okay. But now the canon side of it, this is the guy. This is the guy I associate with. So that was a really tough moment for me. And the way that Ben did it, the way that it played out, it worked. And again, getting back to that, if you know me, my favorite books are the ones where my favorite characters die. And so I know that that's what's catapulted this movie to the top for me. I'm worried more that, in 6 months' time, 2 years' time, it may dwindle down. But right now, it is really high up there. There were so many aspects about Han Solo's character and everything about him in this that just had me. I had misconceived perceptions going in, from the trailer, all the Han Solo and the Falcon flying when we saw the loop-de-loops. I'm like, oh yeah, we're gonna see Han in the ship, then we see Rey crashing it into snow and stuff, and I'm like, oh, those are completely flipped. So there was all these really great Han Solo moments for me throughout the film. So I, the Han Solo fan in me was having a heyday up until that last scene. But again, it was so brilliantly done. On the second watch, I was telling you this, Riley, in text, we were texting back and forth, and I said my favorite scene was right before Han's death. And it was after he said Ben, and he walks out, and he's starting to talk to him. And Finn and Rey show up. They open the blast door. They just climbed up the outside. The sun is dwindling down. Starkiller Base is pulling it all in, all trying to get the last of the energy from the sun. And there's a scene where you see them all, you know, they're on the catwalk. You got Kylo Ren down in one corner. You got Han, and you got them up above. And the light is streaming through, and it's coming down, and it's cast on both Han and his son. And, you know, when I was done watching the movie, I was telling my wife, I'm like, that scene was so damn powerful. Because yeah. when the sun's last bit of light finally twinkled out, it was like Kylo Ren's soul had lost the last bit of light, because he was conflicted about the tragedy that happened to Vader. And in this case, the tragedy was succumbing to the light, the inner spark that Palpatine always knew was in Vader. And Kylo's yeah. scared of that. And I think that was an angle that really turned my gut, because Kylo is Han's son. You know, I was thinking Kylo's going to be this character I was really going to love, and I ended up coming away really not liking him. I questioned, you know, Adam Driver as the choice at first, but my wife, she's kind of hung up on him being the actor, and I'm like, you know, props off to Adam Driver, man. He really made me not like the character. Like, I'm worried now that they're going to redeem him. I'm like, I don't think I can forgive him. I'm looking at the figure here on my desk, and I'm like, gosh, you know, he was really cool before this movie. Now I'm like, dude, like, I'm loathing your way right now, man. Like, yeah. So conflicted is definitely a good way of putting it. A lot of emotions.
So many emotions. So many emotions. Ooh. And here's the thing is that Kylo Ren is, in my mind, as a Star Wars fan, now irredeemable. You can't have someone kill Han Solo, who is his son. It's the anti-Vader. It's the father trying to redeem the son and failing, instead of the son trying to redeem his father and succeeding. It's such an inverse from what we're used to in the world of Star Wars and in the original trilogy themes. It was so hard to accept the first time I saw this film. It was so difficult to even kind of wrap my mind around the first time I saw this film. There's so many things that I missed, and that I'll never forget that there are two shots in that scene. One, where Kylo Ren has just said, help me, you know, I can't remember the exact words, but it's help me, I'm too weak, destroy what's you know, holding me back. And Han Solo is there. He's there to help his son. And as he's walked onto the catwalk and reaches out his hand to take Ben's hand as he extends his lightsaber, there's the first shot that shows his son with his palms open, holding the lightsaber. And then they cut away, and then when they cut back, this is just brilliant filmmaking. His hands are clutched tight. And when I saw that, the first time I saw the film, I knew that was the moment that the unthinkable was about to happen, and Kylo Ren was about to become, in every sense of the word, the anti-Vader, because he was mm-hmm. going to do something that made us as an audience truly believe in his not only pure evil, but his desire for evil. Vader is confident in the dark side, but he is justified what he's done in his mind.
Well, and Vader hates what he has become. Vader hates mm-hmm. the fact that he hates himself. You can see his self-loathing, and he hates the Emperor too. It's the reason why basically the second he gets a chance with Luke, he's saying, come, let's kill the Emperor together and we'll forge the galaxy the way it should be, because yeah. he's still fighting the Emperor's vision of a truly evil world. For me, it was the moment when Han has that look of resignation, hope, and fear, and he runs forward to the bridge and shouts Ben's yeah. name. At that moment, I was so afraid when he walked onto the catwalk.
Yeah.
I was so afraid, but then I was like, no, this is actually going to go well, because I saw when Kylo Ren removes his mask and you can see his face and how emotional he is and how conflicted he is, because he feels the call of the light. He feels the call of his father, and he sees his father's love for him. And then in that moment, I went from fear to hope. In that moment, I thought that Han would not die. And then I saw Ben's hands close on the lightsaber hilt.
Yeah.
And that was the moment when I became afraid again, but just too late, because it was still shocking to me. Even though it was expected, it was still shocking to me.
And when we had Chewie's reaction, I think that was so brilliant.
Yes.
You know, everyone was in that moment. My wife was the one lone voice that screamed, "Oh, no!" when that moment happened. And I think most of the rest of the fans were just completely shocked. I mean, you know, not to bring Legends up too much, but the big three were always hands off, you know, for so long. They would never go there. And then to have them come out kicking like that was something that really took me back. Like, I immediately was thinking, there is a huge story here for the new canon books, you know, because Luke in Legends, he'd had students fall and stuff, but to walk away like that was so different. And I kept thinking about Han. You know, Han walked away too. He lost his son. Leia was talking about that she lost Kylo. She lost Ben when she sent him off with Luke. And she's all, "That's when I lost both of you." And I thought about, you know, the struggle of Han's that I loved and hated the most. And that was during the New Jedi Order when he lost Chewie. And he did the same kind of thing. You know, the loss was so big, he took off. And he said, you know, I went back to the one thing I knew how to do. And that really just it broke my heart in that moment when I was watching that, because – you know, that's a side of Han that I didn't think I'd be okay with that. And I mean, that's where my conflict is. I'm like, man, I'm getting emotional right here on this, because that's my boy, guys.
Yeah,
I'm having a hard time thinking what episode 8's going to be like without Han in it. I mean, there were so many contrasts to elements of Vector Prime. You know, Chewie was the one that died and Han ended up leaving, and Chewie's body was on a planet that implodes. And now we have that with Han. And that was rough for me. Han losing the ship and only getting it back for a day. Mm-hmm. I'm like, there's so many stories here. You know, I'm glad they left that gap. We were talking about this, you know, the journey of The Force Awakens. We got books, we got trilogies that weren't completed. Are they doing this on purpose? But now I'm like, how soon are they going to fill in that gap? Because there are stories there I want to know. I want to know what happened with Ben when he became Kylo. I want to know more about Snoke. But I don't think they're going to give us much of that. And I kind of think that they're going to be smart to hold off on those stories, as much as I really want to know right now. I really want to know what drove Luke Skywalker away and sent Han off that broke off their relationship. You know, because there was that inner struggle. I mean, Maz is even telling him, you know, you need to get back in the fight. And that was an aspect of the film that I didn't catch on the first time through, that Leia is, in a sense, leading the resistance against the best wishes of the New Republic formally. But the New Republic is supporting them,
like,
and Han is
table.
Kind of in this background, disappeared and off doing his own thing, and everyone's like, you need to come back to the fold. And as soon as he does, they have this huge victory, but they lose him. I mean, I'm just so interested and worried and concerned about where they're going to go without Han Solo, man.
Well, and if you think about it too, what will happen to Leia? She found out. She had no closure with Vader being her father like Luke did. Her brother left her. Her husband or significant other, whichever the case may be, left her.
Yeah.
Her son turned to the dark side. Her planet blew up. Her adopted parents blew up. Leia, as Riley, you phrased it, has become an extraordinarily tragic figure, and I so admire her strength of spirit shown in the film. She keeps going even though she is so burdened by the death of Han, by the death of the man that she loves still.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And she is such a tragic character in a way that has to be there because of the central thrust of the tension of this film. And it's something that was so difficult to accept the first few times, the first time watching it especially. But I think her character is just one of remarkable resilience. And and the band, and it's sort of there. Mark, you're right. You're so right, because there's that brief moment of glory, that small amount of time that we see Han and Leia together again, and they have the quipping back and forth, and she's saying, "Well, don't say the Death Star," right? All these amazing immediate connection where that chemistry's there. It's there again, against all odds. We're seeing Han and Leia on screen again, and yet their relationship is defined by this incredible tragedy that is just the central thrust of not just the plot of this film, but the pain of this film. This is a painful Star Wars film in so many ways.
Well, I want to jump on that because one other angle that is very painful for me here is the bromances. Okay. I mean, bromances aside here, we had one great one, but the other one that was missing for me was the Han and Luke. And Han is never going to meet up with Luke again.
Yeah.
Luke's never going to get that closure. I mean, I don't know how it went down. Did Han yell at him? Did he, turn his back on Luke? Did he just shut down completely? Did he blow up at Luke because of it? Luke, in a sense, had a hand in turning his son or helped him along the way. And Han could hold or harbor resentment for that. And that was never resolved. I mean, that for me, I think, was another aspect that really was like a stab to my heart. It was like, wow, like he hasn't seen Luke since his son fell, and he could be blaming. I mean, there could be some serious unresolved stuff there.
Oh, but there isn't though, because Han in some ways blames himself because he thinks that he's helpless. In the film, if you'll recall, he does not think that he can do anything to save Ben until Leia convinces him that there might be a chance, that because he's Ben's father, there's a chance. Because Han, who has the greatest respect for Luke and the greatest admiration for Luke, says essentially he's not Luke, he's not a Jedi, and if Luke couldn't save him, who could? So I think that Han is his own insecurity gets in his way, and he has a great respect and love for Luke and thinks that where Luke failed, there's no possible way for Han himself to succeed.
And that's such a powerful, and I'll go ahead and say it, that's probably the most powerful scene in the whole movie, because it's this moment where Han's own self-doubt about who he is and who he was and his ability to redeem his son is so evident that when he talks to Leia all these years later, after they each had to deal with their son's fall in their own way, when she tells Han, after he questions himself, Luke couldn't even save him. Luke's a Jedi, and Princess Leia, and now General Leia, looks at him and with a kind of love and support that we haven't seen, since they were, rolling along in Return of the Jedi. In that kind of relationship, we see her say, "You're his father." And it was really powerful to hear, because it's one of those things that's what, especially in the subsequent viewings, I really caught a lot more of those moments together, where it's their belief in their son that unites them again. And that's why Han Solo, when he sees Kylo Ren, or as he would call him, Ben, out on that catwalk on Starkiller Base, that's why he has to be. There's no other choice. He's there to save his son, and he has to try. And it's, like we said, Kylo Ren's decision to kill the one man who actually could save him. I think this is what the film proves, is that the reason Kylo Ren brutally murdered his father, Han Solo, is because he was actually the man who could have saved him, and he knew it. So that's why he fully embraced it. Oh, Mark, you're saying something? I think you're muted. There we go.
See, that's an angle. That's an angle that I'm glad you bring up, because it jumped up to me as well. It reminded me of Darth Bane, Darth Malgus, and Darth Cadus. You know, all three of these Sith Lords and Legends had to make a similar sacrifice. And yet I was like, well, there's nothing to say that he's actually a Sith. I mean, we were told by Snoke himself that he's the master of the Knights of Ren. You know, are the Knights of Ren, are they their own order like the Sith, or are they practitioners of the Sith? Like, that whole sacrifice was definitely something distinct to the Sith, at least as far as Legends was concerned. I don't know how canon's going to roll with that, but I immediately had that connection of like, okay, this is his dark sacrifice. And that was what Legends played with the Sith, was like, you had to have something so, you know, something that means so much to you that it's that you can't turn back point. And when it was Jason, Han's son in Legends, it was Mara, because Mara was the one that knew. Mara was the one that if he took out Mara, it would hurt Luke the most. It would hurt his mom the most. It would hurt his sister the most. Like, Mara was the linchpin for so many things, and it worked out. So there was like these harmonics for me, you know, where I was like, I know there's probably people out there that didn't like that they took elements and stuff and turned them and made them new again, but I kind of saw that coming, so I appreciated that. But there were a lot of things about this film that I appreciated. Like, I really appreciate the fact that there was an 8-year-old J.J. Abrams out there in his front yard that was playing really rough and tumble with his Millennium Falcon. Because those scenes, especially when Han wrecks it, were exactly how I have done that on my bed 48,000 times.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true. And it's so well done.
I do want to mention, Darth Hound in this chat says that Han and Leia did marry according to the visual dictionary. So,
oh, good.
I'm not familiar with that, but yeah.
I guess that's what I love about this is because what this tells us is that it doesn't matter. Like, whether they were married or not, they were torn apart, you know, in the years following Return of the Jedi. And this is the one thing that's, I think, strange about this film. Is, as I think about it, I remember early on, Mark, in fact, you and I did a Google Hangout a night or two after the announcement was made that Disney had purchased Lucasfilm. And I remember in that Google Hangout talking about, well, how do they do a film without ruining the ending of Return of the Jedi that ends so perfectly, where Luke has saved the day? And as I said at the outset in the intro of the show, our hero has failed. Like, if his job was to bring about, if he was, whether he was doing the right thing is another debate. But in his attempt to restore the Jedi Order, he failed, probably through no fault of his own, but he failed. It remains there. But I find myself now so much more appreciating the fact that Star Wars is not going to have, for better or for worse, and now I'm beginning to think for better, Star Wars is not going to have that storybook fairy tale ending.
And they all lived happily ever after.
It's not going to have that. But it's one of those things that this film proves, that in the search for Skywalker, evil always has a tendency to prevail in one form or fashion, and it morphs.
Well,
and there's so much that we don't know, but in that fact, there's a kind of poetry to that, I think.
But if you think about it, it's the consequences of decades of the Empire and decades of rule by the most evil villain that the Star Wars universe has probably faced in hundreds of years, in the form of Palpatine. And it's the result of the Jedi's chosen one turning to the dark side and obliterating almost all of the remnants of the light. And, I mean, the galaxy fell into darkness, and there's no way to recover quickly from that. There are going to be ripple effects of this darkness for generations to come, and we see those ripple effects in Ben. I do want to say, though, when I first saw the film, I did come away from it thinking that Kylo Ren is an almost irredeemable character.
Yeah.
However, as I continued watching it, my second and third time, I actually go back on that statement a little bit. I do still think that it's likely that he's not a redeemable character, because it's not necessarily that he's gone too far, because Anakin did terrible things as well. But it's because he wants to go so far, whereas Anakin did not. Anakin did so because he felt forced to. He made the choice because
Have I done?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what he said
and
in
Anakin
of the Sith.
Always had his regrets, whereas Kylo Ren has been striving to be evil. But I do wonder, will we see him come to regret this decision? And his motivation seems to be, you know, he said, your son, meaning himself, before he turned to the dark side, your son was weak and foolish like you, is what he said to Han.
Yeah.
So he wants power. He does not want to be weak and foolish. And we wonder at what happened to him that made him so desperately not want to be weak. Like,
yeah, because Rey
like,
pointed
we know
that
what
out.
Happened,
she's like,
we know what happened to Anakin to make him want to learn to overcome death. You know, what happened with his mother, what happened with his dreams with Padme. We don't know what happened to Ben yet. But what if in Rey, there's so much fascination he has with Rey. He fears her. He is attracted to her, not in the sense of anything romantic, but he is fascinated by the fact that she is actually able to challenge him. Mm-hmm. He wants to teach her. He's drawn to her power. I think he may actually, as he's drawn to the light, he's drawn to Rey.
Yeah.
Because she is a symbol of the light that's still calling to him, even after Han is dead. And I do wonder, will we see Ben become every ounce of the light crushed out of him in his future training that Snoke hints at? Or will we see him slowly be tormented by his decision to kill his father and attracted back to the light as he sees that Rey will become more powerful than him through the light side, and he will realize the dark side is not the right path?
Well said. Yeah. I could see
I don't know. I want to see this. I want to see this.
Yeah, I'm still so much in a headspace that I couldn't accept it right now, and maybe that's just because I'm still too close to it and still too close to having seen the film. I think there's what I'm kind of looking for, and what I'm at least in my headspace now, is a kind of poetry to the exact inversion of Darth Vader and Kylo Ren. And I think that if he is the irredeemable character, and it plays out very differently, but in a way that I think J.J. Abrams has done expertly. It's not something that George Lucas would have done, and it's not something I'll be frankly honest, it is not George Lucas's Star Wars. It's a very different Star Wars from the classic saga. This is a new era of Star Wars that goes far beyond just who's directing it or what studio is distributing it. It is a kind of story that is very different. And to be honest, especially after the first viewing, it's something that I've had to kind of partition away from what I've loved about the other Star Wars films, because I really, especially, I had a hard time, and I would not have said this even 2 days ago, but today I can say I love this film. I would not have said that after the first viewing. But I love it in a very different way than I love the classic trilogy, or in a very different way in that I love the prequels. And so it's taken a lot of time to process, but that's kind of where I find myself today. And I think this is us in the fallout. This is us after having seen this film several times, and this is us as a Star Wars fandom. And I think that this film has started a kind of conversation and transformed fandom in a way that I can only hope and think is going to be very positive when it comes to Star Wars moving forward. If these are the kinds of films Disney can produce, I welcome the future of this saga in a way that I'm very excited about, but in a way that's very different from the classic saga. So I kind of want to get y'all's, I feel like this is a good place. We're going to talk about this film a lot. We're going to talk about the difference of filmography, the totally different style of VFX and the overtly practical effects, and some of the plot holes, perhaps some of the questions that are unanswered that perhaps shouldn't be unanswered. Some of the questions that are unanswered that perhaps should have been answered. There's a lot in this film that that we need to really take some great time to process, and that's what we're going to be doing here at the Star Wars Report in the coming weeks. But I think this is the perfect way to kick off our review and our reaction to The Force Awakens. But I don't want to take us out without giving you guys a chance to give kind of your final thoughts and put a pin in this conversation, because it's been a good one. This has really been my favorite conversation I've had about this movie in the last few days. So of all the various conversations, this is definitely really, I felt, helped me even out loud, kind of, as you guys have probably heard, process what's been going on these last few days. So I'll start with you, Bethany, if you don't mind.
If I can, and I don't mean to pull a Steve and derail the podcast.
No.
Riley's like, oh no. But I do want to ask Mark one last thing about the Han Solo death scene and then give him my thoughts on it as well, because I think we approached it differently, and I'm fascinated to hear Mark, because you mentioned that you can't stand Kylo Ren in the sense that you can't stand the villain that he is, not that you think he's a poorly done character or something. But I just wondered, what was your... You felt so badly for Han, and I did as well, but do you have any sympathy for Ben?
I'm conflicted there, because...
That's a tough one.
I kind of feel like I need to know what went down during Luke's attempt to reestablish the Jedi. I need to know what Snoke's doing, because like you had pointed out, Bethany, you know, we knew why Anakin was doing what he was doing. We don't know what it was Snoke said to Ben, but Han pretty much says it, you know, he's just using you for power. I mean, it seems clear to me, you know, hey, any grandchildren of Darth Vader are going to be who you want to be wielding your baton of awesomeness. Captain Phasma didn't seem to have as big a role as I was hoping. And
yeah,
so I was kind of, you know, it definitely seemed like General Hux and Kylo were the two in charge, but Kylo has that definite Vader feel with Snoke. I mean, when the planet starts imploding, Snoke's like, go get him. You know, I mean, my life was like, did he die on the planet? The planet imploded. Did he get off? I'm like, well, no, Snoke told him to go get him. So clearly he had to go get him. I mean, you know, you wouldn't have said that otherwise. But yeah, I mean, it gave me the sense that Kylo is important. And I want to know more about that, because I am conflicted. Like, so me and my wife dislike him for different reasons. So it's weird, because like my wife's never wanted to come on the show because she's afraid that her outlook on Luke Skywalker would put me in a negative light. My wife hates Luke Skywalker. She finds him a whiny bee, as she puts it. And so she felt that Adam Driver made Kylo Ren the same. She felt like he was every bit as whiny as Luke was in A New Hope. And she also couldn't get around some of his facial features. She had a real hard time with seeing him being Han and Leia's kid. And I thought about that after the first showing, because I was like, okay, well, there were all these websites of like, hey, we're going to do a young Han Solo. What would he look like? Hey, if we were going to take the EU and adapt it, who would be Ben, Luke, and Han and you know, all these other kids? And so in that regard, I was like, you're right. He doesn't look like them at all. And so there was that angle. But I quickly got past that, where that was my wife's hang-up. And for me, it was more, you know, I want to know what it was that drove the betrayal, because he really hated his dad. And my kids are at the age of 13, and you know, I've talked about this more on Beyond the Films and with Rebels Roundtable, but when I was a teenager, I got into drinking, and I went into a really dark place, and it really affected my relationship with my dad specifically. My dad had a really thick beard. You know, I kind of do to this degree, but my dad had a really high up on his forehead beard. Yeah. So when my dad would get mad, like, it was like Bigfoot yelling at you all the time. And so, you know, me and him had a really rocky relationship through my teen years. Very solid when I was a younger kid. You know, he was my scout leader and stuff like that. But when we got older, it got rocked. And, you know, we eventually overcame that and we started going to movies and stuff. And we're back to everything's good. But I think about that with my kids, you know, when I get disappointed and I blow up a time or two, and I channel my dad then. And I think back to how I felt about my dad. And I was thinking about those kind of things. Like, what did Han Solo do that would help Kylo Ren, or, you know, Ben Solo in this case, get to a point where he felt like Kylo, where Kylo Ren felt that Ben Solo was enough like his father that he needed to destroy it. That line really struck a resonance in my mind and had something flicking where I really feel like I need to know what that story is. And again, I don't know if we're going to get that until episode 9 even. I don't know if they're going to say any of that with Luke being gone. Like between now and 8, I would say absolutely not. They're not going to touch it. Not until they get back to it with Luke, why Luke left, kind of give some of it there, save the mystery for that. But even then, I'm like, I don't know if they would go there yet. I don't know if they would hold off on that. So that's definitely one of the parts for me that was really rough and hard. But you were talking about the connection with Rey, and I'm of the opinion that she's the product of some kind of one-night stand Skywalker had, and her mom ended up marrying some other guy, and they left her. Because I have a feeling that connection, like Maz had talked about, you know, that lightsaber was Luke's, it was his father's, now it's calling to you. You know, Luke, we had that trailer where it was talking about, you know, your destiny. It was my sister's destiny. So there's all these things that lead me to believe that. And I was thinking about that connection. You were talking about him being drawn to the power. And I think you're right. I think the power in this case is the same connection, the same thing that makes Ben Solo such a prize for Snoke in the First Order. The power of being the Chosen One and the blood of the Chosen One running through your veins, even as a granddaughter. And that might not be the case, but that's where I'm leaning after watching that. And I was impressed that the movie didn't touch on that, and with Finn too. You know, we didn't really get a name. We just found out that he, like the Jedi, the stormtroopers were taken as infants, raised without names, and then sought into service. But what I found interesting there was that this was literally his first mission. So it was like, wow, they really sat on them for a while. At
least. He was working sanitation all that time on Starkiller Base.
Wow, man. Scrub that toilet.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of things that this movie put into play that I really want to go backwards and forwards and learn more. And you guys know me, when it comes to anything, you know, that's the one thing that gives it the lasting power. And I think that's one of the things that really drove this back, because, you know, of the new canon materials, we haven't really had anything that's done that. We've had some good books. We've had Dark Disciple, you know, Battlefront's been fun, right? Lost Stars, I'm hearing, is a great romance and stuff. But, you know, Aftermath gave us like an interlude where we kind of heard about Mon Mothma wanting to park the military. So that gives an idea of why the New Republic doesn't have a military. Kind of gives an idea that, you know, Leia didn't agree with that idea, so Leia started the resistance. So we have that. We've got the perfect weapon, which tells us how Maz gets Luke's lightsaber. We've got the Force Awakens novelization. It gives us what happened with Poe after the wreck of the TIE fighter, things like that. But there's nothing really that jumped out that made me go, oh, I need to know more. I mean, I know that when I got done with Shattered Empire, there was those two Force-sensitive trees, and I was like, ooh, is that going to show up in the next film? But it didn't. So immediately my interest there dropped off. But this film, it provided all that the canon has not provided. You know, and that was the aspect of Legends that always kept me hooked, that I want to know more about the mystery. And as I got a little more, there was just enough more to keep me interested in wanting to know about the next story and the next story. And then there'd be a new era that would dwell into something new. So, you know, in that regard, Star Wars has still got that going down, because there's stuff going on in Rebels that I want to know about. I want to know how we get to here.
So
there's stuff from Clone Wars that wasn't resolved that I want to know about. Well, so it's a great time and a great place.
I think how you feel about Kylo Ren does make me kind of want to step back and rethink my feelings and thoughts towards the character. But I did want to say, when I first watched the film, the reason why I found it shocking that Han died was not because I couldn't see it coming, but because Ben is so torn, he's so conflicted. And in that moment, I felt so sorry for him that I was tearing up for Ben before Han died. And then when Luke... I guess when Han died in that moment, it was as though there was a double tragedy. A character that I love died horribly at the hands of his son and did not even resent him for it. You know, you see Han reach up and touch Ben's face in one last tender gesture before he plummets out of sight. And it's a double tragedy. So I had already been in some way so sympathetically drawn towards the tragedy of Ben's story that struck me harshly as well. And I will say, when I saw the movie again today, I guess I was a little less sympathetic towards Ben's character. I still am to some degree, but this time it hit me so hard that Han died that I was just sitting there with tears running down my face and dripping off my chin, and I probably looked awful, but who cares? It's Star Wars. So, and it was all for Han this time, and that's how much that scene struck me. And it's, we will feel the effects of Han's death throughout the rest of this trilogy, I think.
It's so true. Yes, we will. And it's such a, it's a powerful movie, and there's so much to talk about. Mark, you, I mean, you mentioned at the beginning, we don't even, I mean, this is going to be our tease. You have a great moment that we talked about on the phone before we started the show about your favorite scene and favorite shot of the film. And we're going to talk about that next week. I want to just do a quick thank you to everyone who supported the show. You can do so as well. It's patreon.com/Star Wars Report if you'd like. A huge thank you to everybody who supported us all this month as we did Star Wars Tonight and all these other huge creative projects that we're doing. So we've got a lot more coming, and we appreciate everyone who's supporting us there. And we want to hear your thoughts. Shoot us an email, starwarsreport@gmail.com. We're going to be doing a lot of feedback in the coming weeks, so be sure to do that. And I'm just going to leave off with our social media. Make sure that you engage in the conversation with us as we process this film together. We're going to be talking a long time about this. So thank you so much for tuning into this week's podcast. And we encourage you to stick with us as we process this film together as a community and as a podcast and as friends. We're on social media. It's at the Riley Guy for me on Instagram, Twitter, at Bethany L. Blanton for Bethany, and Mark is at Illogical Rogue 2. Make sure you join and talk to us there, and we will see you next week on this very podcast. Remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.